listening to the Revolving Door Radio Program on the Intrepid Paradigm Broadcasting Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, featuring the Baron of Broadcasting, Bruce Collins, and radio's lethal weapon, Chad Miles, the most interesting and entertaining hour in radio.
We won't quit until we're done. We got heart when we play. Take you on.
Welcome to the Revolving Door program, where each week is a revolving door of hosts. To listen to past archives of the Revolving Door program, please go to ipbn-fm.com. That's ipbn-fm.com. Tonight, we will be talking to Brad Olson about his views on underground bases and shadow governments. And now let me introduce my co-host, Bruce Collins. Bruce is a former pro wrestling promoter, an author of three published books, and the former book reviewer of Monster Radio, which was nationally syndicated in 84 radio markets. Bruce and I host The Bruce Collins Show Friday nights on WWPR 1490 AM in Tampa, Florida, and past archives of The Bruce Collins Show can also be found at ipbn-fm.com. Welcome to the Revolving Door program, Bruce.
Well, thank you very much. And in my spare time, I've been working on my fourth book, which is about pro wrestling holds, and I'm up to headbutt, which makes no sense because that's two body parts. Anyway, it's great to be here.
A headbutt as opposed to a butt head.
That's right.
Okay, well, that's good. Hey, who's that guy standing over in the corner?
What? Oh. Hey, come over here. Yeah, come on. Right here. Okay. That's my cousin, Chad.
Oh, what's he doing here?
I invited him. Do you have a problem with that?
No, I'm just asking.
Hey, do you see a resemblance?
Yeah, he looks just like you. It's really uncanny.
Yeah, we're identical twins.
Wait, I thought you said you were cousins.
That's right.
Well, how can you be identical twins?
Are you starting off with a math problem, Miles? You know I don't understand that stork stuff.
Okay. What does he do for a living?
He's an artist. You know, he's done some poetry, he's done sculptures, he's done paintings.
Oh, did I ever tell you that Senior Pickles paints?
It always goes back to your dog, doesn't it, Chad? There's no comparison. My cousin's work has been featured at the Palace of Fine Arts, but Senior Pickles' work has been to the Museum of Mediocre Garbage.
Hey, watch it.
Anyway, I wanted my cousin to say a few words to the audience tonight.
Oh, what's his name?
His name is Colin S. Collins.
Collins Collins?
No. Who names their kid Collins Collins? It's Colin S. Collins.
Oh, hi, Colin. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing most excellent, gentlemen. I just finished a poem.
Oh, really? Could you share it with the audience?
Of course. There once was a man named Miles who worked with a radio punster. There was Chad and his flea-bitten dog who sent Bruce's show right into the dumpster.
Instant classic!
I think I was just insulted.
I know you were.
Look, I haven't named that poem yet, but I would be happy to donate it to the show. It's a Colin original.
That's very generous of you, Colin.
Hey, I have a poem for the two of you.
Oh, really? You're feeling inspired now?
You have no idea. Here it is. Roses are red and violets are blue. The smell of the toilet reminds me of the both of you.
That was terrible. What did you think of it, Colin?
Honestly, I think it lacked artistic prose.
Right.
Almost seemed like it was written by a hobbit or Nephilim. Is that how you say that? Nephilim? Or maybe one of them three-toed chupacabras?
I agree. Colin is right.
Hold on, I'm laughing. Hey, Colin, when did you start writing poems?
I started when...
Hey, hold on. You called him Colin. You did that on purpose. You know, if your name had been Miles Cyrus, you'd be like that female chick. Nobody would name their child Colin, and you know it.
My name is Colin S. Collins.
That's right.
Oh, sorry.
From now on, you can refer to me as Colin S. Collins, poet extraordinaire.
Yeah, I'll be sure to do that.
See that you do, Chad.
And on that note, up next is Brad Olson. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Revolving Door radio program. Hey, Bruce, you know, I really wish I knew what was going on in the world. Do you have any news stories that you could read to us?
Actually, I do have a few.
Really?
Yes, here's one. A reptile zoo rescued 150 crocodiles, alligators, and caimans. I'm not sure what those are. From a Toronto area home last Friday after a man who was raising them issued a plea for help. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, Bri Loist of the Indian River Reptile Zoo told CBC Radio's Metro Morning Show on Thursday. So while people were eating their breakfast, they could hear about 150 crocodiles jammed into a house. I could not believe that somebody had that many crocodilians. Never heard that one before. And raised them to adulthood. Loist said the crocs were kept in aquariums for about 10 years. That's a lot of aquariums. He told the Toronto Star that it was a couple keeping the animals but has not identified them. So that's the new name of my rock band, the Crocodilians.
And the lead singer is Bri Loist.
Yeah, and they issued a plea for help. Can you imagine the poor cop that got that one? Car 54, please respond to the house with 150 crocodiles.
Bri Loist. That sounds like a comic book character, doesn't it?
It is.
Like a supervillain.
Exactly.
Bri Loist, a.k.a. the Crocodilian.
I'm really disappointed by this news story, though. I would have liked to have had a breakdown between the number of crocodiles and the number of alligators. But that's just me.
You're a detail person.
That's right.
Kept in aquariums for 10 years.
Yeah.
10 years, and these must have been some large aquariums, I'm guessing.
Oh, they would have to be.
That would be pretty big.
That would be. And as if that's not enough, a Florida woman who faces DUI charges after crashing her car into an apartment building told police her dog was to blame and that they should arrest her pet instead of her. It didn't work. They always blame the dog. Christina Ann Marie Lamoureux, wasn't that the lady that Gene Wilder married? Christina Ann Marie Lamoureux of Wildwood near Orlando was stopped by police last week after fleeing the scene of the crash, according to local newspaper, The Daily Commercial. Who would subscribe to a Daily Commercial?
Daily Commercial.
At least it's honest news. Officers said Lamoureux smelled of booze and was acting confused when they found her in her apartment after the accident. Although Lamoureux admitted to having been behind the wheel during the incident, she said her dog was responsible for the crash.
Wow.
Yes.
And Anna Marie Lamoureux.
And as they carted Lamoureux away in retaliation, the dog bit her. No, I added that part.
I'll have to ask Senior Pickles if he knows that dog.
Here's one enough to make you vomit. Talk about having money to burn. The wealthy son of a Swiss millionaire was sentenced to 2 years probation and a $33,000 fine. That's chump change. After he torched his Ferrari 458 so that he could use the insurance money to buy the latest model year. The Ferrari was one of 15 luxury sports cars that the 20-year-old owns. The Ferrari was a gift from his father. Oh, Daddy, may I have another? And he told a judge he was afraid of asking his dad to buy him a new one. Yes, because you only have 15 luxury sports cars. Cost of a replacement runs in the neighborhood of $310,000, according to Sky News. Now, there's a kid with a gold-plated noggin.
Just a little spoiled.
Yes. I think I saw that kid. He's on probation, and he's now riding a gold-plated bicycle, and he pulled up to my car the other day, and he said, "Pardon me, do you have any gray poupon?" And I said, "But of course."
But of course.
Can you imagine
okay.
that?
Okay.
"Father, may I have another Ferrari?"
15. Right. He's 20 years old, owns 15 luxury sports cars.
That's enough to make you sick.
I don't think I had 15 Hot Wheels cars when I was a kid.
Yeah. And you know, he's a Swiss millionaire, so he had to have made that money off of selling a lot of cheese. A performance artist and professor in Perth, Australia, which is where Stan Deo used to be. Remember all those great old Art Bell interviews with Stan Deo from Perth, Australia, where he claimed there was a secret base or something, some such nonsense. Anyway, a performance artist and professor in Perth, Australia, always has something up his sleeve. What do you think it is, folks? It's an ear! For the last 9 years, the artist known only as Stellark... Stellark... Stellark! Show me your ear! The artist known as Stellark, formerly known as Prince, no, just kidding, has been growing a third ear on his left arm, all in the name of art. As a performance artist, I am particularly interested in that idea of the post-human, that idea of the cyborg, he said, according to CNN. Gee, at least CNN is reporting all the important news. He continued.
Right.
He continues, "What it means to be human will not be determined any longer merely by your biological structure, but perhaps also determined largely by all of the technology that's plugged or inserted into you." Boy, this guy has been a prime candidate for mind control, apparently. Stellark first thought about getting an extra ear in 1996. However, he couldn't hear the surgeons. No, just kidding. He couldn't find any surgeons willing to hear him out. Get it? There's an old play on words. Hear him out until 2006. The extra ear was made from a scaffold of biocompatible material commonly used in plastic surgery. What is this? The only scaffold I know is the metal thing that people walk across. That's a new one. Have you heard that that term used in that way? A scaffold of biocompatible material.
No.
I don't even know what that means. Maybe it was on a scaffold. Obviously it wasn't a clone. It was biocompatible material commonly used in plastic surgery. So my guess is Play-Doh? I don't know. Stellark originally thought of putting it behind one of his real ears. Oh, that would have looked cute. But chose to have it transplanted in the arm where the skin could stretch without requiring the prosthetic to be inflated, according to his website. To be inflated.
There's a lot going on in that news story.
Yeah. The other day, Stellark, of course he's in Australia, he was walking down the street, and who was there to perform an exhibition but Mike Tyson, who bit him in the arm, which was actually the ear. No. And I just have one question, Chad. Why can't he be a normal artist and chop off his ear like Van Gogh?
That's right.
Why does he have to have a third ear?
Or why can't he be a normal artist and hide himself in a wall for a month?
That's right. I remember that guy.
I mean, come on, Stellark. That could be his evil villain lair.
Meanwhile,
in the evil lair of Stellark.
Yes.
Hidden in the wall.
I mean, Senior Pickles, he can paint, but you don't see him adding a fifth leg.
That's right. He's humble. He's a humble artist.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
You'll see. Senior Pickles will be vindicated.
I don't doubt that. I dread it, but I don't doubt it.
All right, Bruce. Well, thanks for that news update. And up next is Brad Olson in a moment.
Brad Olson's passion for writing goes far beyond his book publishing business or the online content he produces. His books have reached a wide audience across the country and have won numerous awards. His work has been reviewed in top publications, and he continues to lecture nationwide on various subjects. He has appeared on dozens of television and nationally syndicated radio shows over the course of two decades. Yet for all the fanfare, Brad Olson likes to spend time with his friends and family while attempting to be outdoors as much as possible. Although the professional task of book publishing occupies most of his year, Brad Olson is also the founder and event producer of the How Weird Street Fair in San Francisco, the city where he currently resides. Brad Olson has appeared on Ancient Aliens and America Unearthed. He also has written articles in Ancient American Magazine, plus several of his own books about sacred destinations from around the world. Now, how did you become interested in the topics that you cover?
Well, let's see if I can give you the elevator pitch in 30 seconds or less. I took a 3-year trip around the world that brought me to many of the sacred places that I write about in the Sacred Places series. And from there, I realized there are a lot more mysteries that accompany many of these sites and many other mysteries that we haven't been told about. And that is what led me to the Esoteric series of books, which are my latest offerings.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about this. I talked about this in the introduction, but tell us about the How Weird Street Fair.
Right. Well, I'm here in San Francisco, California, and in the springtime, myself as the founder and a few other directors, cohorts, helped me organize one of the largest events here in San Francisco. It's primarily electronic dance music, EDM, it's now called. But we have live performers and live musicians as well that come out, and people wear costumes, and it's in the Soma neighborhood on Howard Street, hence the name How Weird. And we do it every year in the springtime. We just had our 16th annual last April, and moving on to 17 next spring.
Now, you have a book called Future Esoteric. What can you tell us about Underground Bases?
Yeah, well, Future Esoteric is basically the second book in the series. Modern Esoteric is how I describe it really quickly, is looking all the way back to this modern age, including the secret societies and antediluvian civilizations of long ago, whereas Future Esoteric takes a forward-looking stance. And this is when I include many of the mysteries of today, as well as many of the extraterrestrial UFO topics that are very esoteric in nature if you look at the true meaning of the word, which is something that is known to a select group of people, such as UFOologists. So in the case of underground bases, well, some of this is not highly classified. Some of it is just in government documents called Continuity of Government, COG. And we know that they've been building these underground bases ever since the end of World War II, ever since the Cold War began. And the idea was that even if there was a huge nuclear war with Russia or anyone else, that the U.S. government could continue by going underground, and there are emergency evacuation plans for every elected official, especially on the federal level, that they have access to go to one of these underground bases. Even if they're, say, on vacation in their own precinct, there's still a way that they could be whisked away to one of the entrances. And so what I found when I was doing the chapter on underground bases and future esoteric is that there are over 130 of these underground bases in continental U.S., and they're interconnected by a magnetic levitation or maglev train that can travel up to Mach 2 speeds. That's twice the speed of sound, all underground, interconnecting these bases with free energy technology that has not been released to the general public above ground. So like so many of these subjects, I just think people have a right to know, and maybe by forcing the issue by enough people demanding that the truth come out, maybe someday we can get a lot of these technologies unlocked, or at least a wider acknowledgement of this underground base program.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm listening to an interview and someone is talking about Dulce, New Mexico, or Area 51, do you think any of these stories are disinformation to take away from what the actual base is, or should I take those seriously also?
You know, disinformation is a prickly pear. It's really hard to wrap your head around, because there are people who are controlled disinformation specialists, and they will basically tell you the truth 90% of the time, but every so often they'll throw a whopper in there, and they like to see who attaches to those big lies that they put out there. Mm-hmm. Well, the official story is Area 51 doesn't exist, or if it does, it's just like an experimental plane laboratory, no mention of the underground features that are a part of that, or the S-4 accompanying base right next door to it. And of course, Dulce, New Mexico, there's nothing there. So to separate the wheat from the chaff, shall we say, and look deeper into these two locations, we definitely find that there is a lot of activity going on there. And some people like Phil Schneider died a very violent death because he was one of the key whistleblowers of what was going on at the Dulce base. And he was working directly with engineers, and he himself was a geologist. His videos are still up on YouTube, and I would recommend to your listeners, if they find this topic interesting, to look up Phil Schneider and hear what he has to say, and then just consider the context in which he met his very horrible ending through strangulation. And when the police went to investigate the scene, they called it a suicide. Yet none of his and all of his documents regarding the underground bases, and he also had some artifacts that he claimed were extraterrestrial, all of that was gone. Yet he had cash in his wallet and other valuables that weren't touched. So it would seem that it was a very targeted hit to silence this man.
Hmm. Interesting. So in these underground bases, is there contact with alien life?
Well, that's what's so interesting about the Dulce base, because that one is said to be a very ancient base. my friend Anthony Sanchez wrote a book called UFO Highway, and he has a section about Dulce in there where he said that back in the 19th century, some of the cavalry of the U.S. Army were just exploring the region around the Arcoleta Mesa, which is this giant mesa which straddles the New Mexico and mostly on the Colorado side. And they actually found this large cave entrance, and at the mouth of the cave were all these dead Apache Indians that had been dead for a very long time. So there had been some kind of battle that took place there. And this cave is now very much cordoned off. It's difficult to find it or get there or even go to the Arcoleta Mesa for that matter. So you can't really examine the ET issue unless you consider that perhaps ETs, at least these malevolent ones who operate out of there, have been here for a very long time, and this is one of their main bases. Witnesses who have survived and escaped, and even Phil Schneider, have said that this base is mainly used for genetic manipulation operations, splicing genes together. Very advanced genetic technology takes place at the lower levels. There's apparently 9 levels to the Dulce base. Humans who basically work in the capacity of serving these malevolent ETs are not allowed to the lower bases, lower levels, I should say. And in one of those lower levels is called the Nightmare Hall of Nightmares, because there are still living people there, and they're like large vats of body parts in solution that are to be used. So it's a very grisly description of what's going on there. But of course, once again, we're met with complete silence as to anything even happening there itself. So a lot of questions surround the Dulce base, and it's really hard to truly understand what's real and what's not.
Yeah. Based on your research and looking into it, I've interviewed several people who believe that the aliens they've come in contact with are friendly. And then there are some people who have horrible interpretations, at least, of what they experienced with aliens. Are we finding, is it different civilizations that are here? Why are some people interpreting, you know, good aliens and bad aliens?
That's a great question, and I always point out that it really doesn't matter what they look like, if they have big eyes or if they're tall or scaly reptoids or if they're very human-like. The only thing that really matters is what is their orientation. Are they service to self, which if they're taking human prisoners and keeping them in jail-like cells in horrific conditions, you could say that those ETs that are running the Dulce base are service to self. They're doing it for their own agenda, for their own needs. But there are ETs, to my understanding, that are benevolent and want to see humans evolve and this planet to not self-destruct. And those are the ETs which are service to others. Mm-hmm. And that's also a position that we can take as human beings in our daily lives. If we try to become service to other people, we're then more in tune with these benevolent ETs, and that's what I try to do personally myself in my everyday life, and in many ways what I do with the How Weird Street Fair is a service to others obligation.
So do you think potentially, I mean, this is an obvious question kind of, but so then potentially I could be walking down a street or at the mall, someplace like that, and potentially there are aliens around me.
Potentially so. Well, according to Charles Hall, who worked on the Nellis Air Force Base, in which Area 51 is part of it, he was in contact with what he called the Tall Whites. And they were indeed very human-like, a little bit taller than regular humans, but they were able to just go to Vegas. They had a fascination with Las Vegas, and of course they were being escorted by CIA, who said nobody can touch them or you have to watch them. But they insisted on going, so they had to send a contingent of human agents to keep an eye on them. And indeed, they like to interact. They like to walk around. They like even like to gamble, according to Charles Hall. And again, I would recommend your listeners to listen to his description of who these tall whites are and his own meeting with them and even communicating with them telepathically.
You know, one thing that's interesting about television is a lot of times there are messages there and we don't even realize it. I think there's propaganda on television. And so what I find interesting is the alien agenda, I guess you could say, the programs about aliens and the X-Files and all of that. Is that trying to send us a message? And if so, what would the message be?
Well, there is such a thing as the Prime Directive. We know it through Star Trek by that name. But in concept, it is a law among ETs, including the malevolent ones, which do have to give a certain degree of revelation as far as what they're up to. So as far as television goes, it is the mean that gets information out there to a mass audience. So to use it as a way to perhaps say things like there could be an alien invasion, whether that's real or holographic, remains to be seen. Or there are ways of saying that there are good ETs in the world. And so I think that is what it's being used for. And it's never quite really how it really is, but that's how they can call it drama or a fictional account and science fiction, basically, and use things like the X-File to perhaps disseminate some of this information, perhaps even disclose what they got coming up next as a way of letting people know or fair game. Form of disclosure, really.
Yeah. You just made me think of an interesting question. Brad Olson is in the Bay Area at night, and he steps outside his dwelling, and he looks up in the night sky, and there's all these lights, UFOs in the sky. What's your first thought? One, government is faking it, or two, an alien invasion?
Or three, Project Bluebeam, holographic fakery.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's funny because I actually have a great view to the east. And on more than one occasion, my girlfriend and I and even friends that we've had over or other people, including us, have seen an object in the sky that basically is stationary but changes colors from blue to red to green back to white. And we've watched it with binocular. Watch it for 10, 15 minutes and it doesn't move. You kind of do something else. And I've even put it on Facebook. Hey, anybody that can see out of the east, take a look at this. Some people have seen it. Others didn't. And then we'd go back and look, and about a half hour, it's completely gone. Now, okay, could have been a helicopter. Could have been an advanced aircraft. It could have been a satellite. It could have been a drone. Could have been a lot of things. I'm not saying it was a craft. But if I were to see something, I would watch it. If it was close enough to maybe film it rather than just a blip, I would try to do that with my phone camera or some other way. And just keep an open mind. I would say that most sightings around the world probably do have a very simple terrestrial explanation behind them. But if we're talking about just 1% being an authentic UFO sighting, once again, we're talking about a game-changing, history-changing moment that would just reshape everything we think we know about ourselves and the world around us. And I think one of the main reasons why there's been an embargo on UFO truth for so long is because think about what it would do to the institutions of Earth, namely religion, how in our Catholic and Christian upbringing, how that would kind of make it all sort of irrelevant, or what it would do to government. Why wouldn't the government tell us this for so long? People would be genuinely angry that we had to wait for mass sightings before the government would confess anything. And so that's sort of the hole they've painted themselves into and they can't get out of. They've tried to on some occasion, but they've kept stalling the issue for so long that they've painted themselves into a corner and they just don't know what to do about it.
Yeah. Now, again, your book, Future Esoteric, it deals with secret governments. What are secret governments and what's their agenda?
Well, it's kind of what I just described. Some of them are related to the UFO ET issue, and the best known is MJ-12, Majestic 12, which documents have surfaced all the way back to the Eisenhower administration that basically outline how they want to handle this, how they retrieve down disks, how they spin a story like how Roswell first was a weather balloon and then it became a test crash, and the ETs were actually crash test dummies, and they changed that story once or twice more, which just makes no sense. So what I like to do is put all these things into like a bell curve, call them data points on a bell curve, and using the example of Roswell, hundreds of data points. But the far majority of them say that it was an exotic craft and there were alien ET bodies that were retrieved from that crash. So this is what I tend to believe is true. Now, of course, Roswell happened well long before I was born. I wasn't there to see it. All I can do is go by the information that's given to us and try to make sense of it.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing about the governments of the world that I don't completely understand, but I have my own theories. But if you look around, all these countries are in debt, massive debt. You see Greece, and it's gone bankrupt, and Puerto Rico is next, and all of these countries seem to be going the way of insolvency. Is that part of the secret government? Do you think that's part of their agenda? And what do you think is going to come out of that?
Right. That's a good question, because then it raises the next issue is who are all these countries in debt to? How can 90% of the countries of the world be in the red? Who do they owe it to? Well, they owe it to the private banking cartels. And this is really the gist of what and who the secret government is, or at least who controls it. Because he who controls the money controls the resources, controls the food, controls the people, all the way down. So if we really look into who these bankers are, we find that they're some are very well-known names, like the Rockefellers in this country, the Rothschilds of Europe, the Warburgs, other elite banking families that own the Federal Reserve, which, by the way, like you know, is privately owned and doesn't have to disclose itself and is not part of the government at all, but issues our currency quite illegally. That was a monetary coup in 1913, but we can't get rid of them. Even though they had a 100-year charter, I was watching very carefully in the year 2013 if there would be any mention whatsoever about renewing the Federal Reserve Charter in the above-ground media. Not one mention. It got renewed for another 100 years behind closed doors in the most secretive kind of way. So this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a secret government that has a lot of resources, a lot of toys that they've been backward engineering ever since Roswell. And this is what leads to the secret space program that's going on right now. And finally, there are some whistleblowers who are coming out and describing some of the technology that we now have and some of the places that we've traveled to within our solar system. And it's just pretty amazing how far advanced humanity is. Yet at the same time, in what I talk about in modern esoteric, you still have primitive, uncontacted Stone Age tribes in various places of the world, such as the Brazilian Amazon region or Papua New Guinea highlands. There are still people who haven't even seen fire or know what a plane looks like. Or if a helicopter does fly over, it would be very similar to us seeing a UFO. So there's this great dichotomy in the level of evolution that is taking place right now on this planet. Some still very, very primitive and others extremely advanced outside of the purview of what most people know about.
So if someone read your books and they came to you and they said, Brad, I read about secret bases and I read about the secret or shadow governments and what can I do about it? What would you tell them? What can people do about all of this? Is there anything we can do?
Well, what we can do is educate ourselves. Mm-hmm. What we can do is make ourselves aware that this is the way of the world right now. And it's my belief that if enough of us do become aware, that there could be this 100th monkey effect. And if I could just take a quick moment to explain this to your listeners, there was a study that was done, I think, in the 1950s in the island south of Japan, where several of these species of monkeys lived on different islands. Well, these anthropologists were watching this one tribe of monkeys, and every year these seasonal roots would grow, and they would know where to dig them up, and then they would just start eating them. Well, one monkey, rather than eating it right away, didn't give in to temptation, took it down to the river, washed the root off, and then ate it. And boy, it tasted so much better with all the dirt and sand off of it. Well, some of the other monkeys saw what was going on, and they started doing it. And that wasn't such a big surprise, but it was an advance in this species development, that evolution does occur in the animal kingdom. But what was truly remarkable is all of the other monkeys on the different islands started doing this at the same time. So there was like a light bulb moment in this species of monkeys where they all started to adapt something, yet they had no way of being in contact with one another. So that was called the 100th monkey effect. And this is a way that consciousness can spread among a species quite organically and maybe just through our thought waves or some form of our consciousness, that we can just all start to get it. And once people start to get it and wake up to a lot of this stuff, well, for one, their cover is blown. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows when a thief's cover is blown, the gig is up and they're pretty close to being arrested then. And then two, it would be this great advancement of humanity that's never before seen. So it's really an amazing time to be alive, and then to be able to grasp some of these subjects collectively is really cutting edge. You know, it would be the cultural creative is one way of describing people that are early adapters to technology, and we see it here in Sunnyvale. I'm in San Francisco. We see it here in Silicon Valley all the time. Mm-hmm. And how the younger generation too, the millennial generation, is so quick to adapt to technology and kind of befuddles their parents how quickly they can adapt to this stuff. Well, these are all various versions of the 100th monkey, how we're all starting to get it. So I think we're leading to what I describe in Future Esoteric is the age of transparency, where once we do reach the threshold of consciousness, aka this 100th monkey effect, there will be a point where you're just not going to be able to pull a fast one or tell a whopper lie anymore, because people are just going to see right through it. And it also ties into the chakra field of humans, that when we lie, we take on a different color, like our aura changes. So once we start becoming more aware of things, we're also going to be able to start perceiving things quite differently, including when we're being lied to. And I think a lot of us already have that capacity already. Mm-hmm. And the people who are doing the lying, aka the mass media, spinning some whopper stories on a daily basis, they realize their time's running out because people are catching on to this and they don't believe it anymore.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting you would say that, because the way propaganda works is, from what I understand about ants, for instance, I believe it was ants, maybe it was frogs, but someone had done a test where they put a jar lid on top of a jar or some kind of a container of ants, either ants or frogs. And these ants would crawl up the side of the container, and they saw that that there was a lid to it. So after a while, they stopped climbing. And pretty soon, this researcher took the lid off, and none of the ants crawled out, because they had been programmed to believe that there was a limit to how high they could go.
I remember that, and I think it was frogs, because the frogs tried to jump out, and they kept hitting their head and bouncing back down, and they took the lid off, and yeah, they wouldn't jump anymore. Same thing with frogs, is that if you turn up the heat in water that they're sitting in very, very slowly, if you turn it up real fast, they'll jump out of the water. But if you turn it up very slowly, it'll reach that hot point, and they won't even realize it. And they'll eventually just cook to death.
Right.
So some of these things are very gradual. Others can be very quick.
Yeah.
But I think back to your original question, what can people do is just make themselves aware of these situations and this predicament that we're in as the human race. And like the great Bill Cooper said, when you put the aliens into the middle of this stuff, you get all the answers. And I don't think it's very easy to discount the ET connection into the whole human experience here.
Yeah.
I think in the background, it's always going to be there.
And you just mentioned another man that was killed.
Yes.
Now, Brad Olson, this has been awesome. But before you go, I want you to go back and talk about your books a little bit, and then at the end, give us your website once again.
Sure. Well, I started by traveling around the world in the early 1990s, and when I came back, I published my first book, which is still in print, called World Stompers, A Global Travel Manifesto. Went through a couple other travel books, and then I developed the Sacred Places series. And I myself authored Sacred Places North America, Sacred Places Around the World, and Sacred Places Europe. And I commissioned another author to do Sacred Places of Goddess. And again, you can see all my books on cccpublishing.com. You can even order off the website. Those go through my office, and anytime they go through my office and they're one of my books, I'll sign a copy for the people and send it along. And my most recent endeavor is the Esoteric series of books. Modern Esoteric is the first in the series, and Future Esoteric. They complement each other very nicely, and I'm currently working on the third book in the series, but it's going to take a little while because I'm in a five-book contracted deal with author Leo Lion Zagami. His first book is called Pope Francis, The Last Pope, and he's living in Rome, and he's seeing things and hearing about things that happen to the clergy in the Vatican that we don't get this news at all. So he covers it in this book, and then we're going to publish his three-book series, Confessions of an Illuminati. So this gets way deep into the secret societies and the whole control grid of this world. So they're very important books, and I'm proud to be his publisher and work with him, and we're going to have Leo come out next summer on a speaking tour. In fact, both of us are booked as being speakers at Contact in the Desert next summer. So
Excellent. Look
for Leo Lane Zagami in America next year.
Great. And can you give out the website one more time?
Sure. CCC Publishing to find out more about my books, bradolson.com.
And we've been speaking with Brad Olson. And, Brad, this has been excellent. I hope you can join us again sometime.
Oh, I'd love to, Bruce. We barely scratched the surface of all the topics we could talk about.
Great. I want to thank our guest this week, Brad Olson, right here on the Revolving Door Radio Program. And again, every week on the Revolving Door Radio Program, we have a different set of hosts. There's Natalina, Johnny McMahon, Basil, and Gons. So I hope you can join the Revolving Door Radio Program each week and listen to all the radio hosts there. You can also go to the Revolving Door Radio Program Facebook page, like us there, and catch up on all the latest news surrounding the Revolving Door Radio Program. Now, when it comes to subjects like the ones we've covered this week, Chad, Miles, and myself are very skeptical about a lot of things. We put our faith and our beliefs in Jesus Christ, and beyond that, there's a lot of gray areas when it comes to conspiratorial and paranormal news. Nonetheless, we find it entertaining and we find it fascinating, and we'll try to delve into different topics each time we host here on the Revolving Door Radio Program. I tend to be a skeptic about sensationalistic topics. Nonetheless, I find them interesting. My identity is not in these topics. My identity is in Jesus Christ and what he has done for me. But the evidence of Jesus Christ's existence is all over the place. You know, the Bible actually says to test everything. And when we test these things that are found in the Bible, we find them to be true. We find that the Bible is historically accurate. We find that many scholars and historians that were around back at the time of Jesus Christ wrote about Jesus Christ, wrote about the early Christians. We know that these historical items that are in the scriptures are true. What I find so interesting about the conspiratorial movement or the paranormal movement or the UFO movement is oftentimes when they cite things as evidence, they're retelling and recycling someone else's stories. Believe in an underground base in Dulce? Well, we believe that because so-and-so was there and he saw it. Believe in the incident Roswell? Well, we believe that because so-and-so was there and saw it. Very little tangible evidence exists for many of these things. Nonetheless, some of the stories are more compelling than others. I listen to Art Bell. I'm a big fan of Art Bell. But 99.999999999% of the guests, I don't believe in a word they're saying. But I do find it entertaining. That's my perspective. That's not the perspective necessarily of all the hosts on the Revolving Door Radio Program. I just want to make you aware of what my perspective is. I'm a wholehearted believer in Jesus Christ and what he has done for me and what he has done for millions of people over centuries of years. That's evidence to me. Just a reminder, Chad and I also do the Bruce Collins Show right here at ipbn-fm.com. Check out the Bruce Collins Show this week. Thank you so much for joining us this week right here on the Revolving Door Radio Program. Take care and God bless.